Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. Going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City, and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones, and this is the Church Planner Podcast, brought to you by Church Planner Magazine. Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete.
And this is Peyton Jones.
Here for episode, I actually think this is 85.
I think we're past that.
Maybe.
Yeah. But it's in the 80s.
But we're not. It's 85.
Okay.
And yet, once again, we're so close I can look into your deep brown eyes and be very uncomfortable.
Absolutely. But we're not naked.
This time, though, I have to be like, I'm trying to face the mic and you at the same time. We're sharing a mic. It's very uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. We've got like that homophobic thing, and yet we got to be close to the mic all at the same time.
You know how I always have stories that I can't wait to share when you say something like that?
Yeah.
I have a story, but I can't share it on the podcast. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, cool. Pete has a homophobic story that he can't share on the podcast. Hey, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. I'm sure we picked a lot of you guys up this week. We do screw around a bunch before we get into church plan. We're probably not going to do that as much today, but we are going to tell you about our webinar coming up on Tuesday. And I've been telling everybody it's Tuesday night because I'm a moron, but it's actually Tuesday morning. So it's Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard. 10 o'clock Central and 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So you can check us out. It is going to be where, Pete? Tell them how to tune in.
If you go to churchplanterwebinar.com, that's how you can get registered. And if you can't make it, this is going to be a webinar with, of course, obviously Peyton Jones and Pete Mitchell, but we are going to have Dave Ferguson on there. And so the topic is on how to start a church planting movement, or how to plant a church that plants churches. So whether your church is just getting started, maybe you're still in the core team building phase, or you are an established church looking to do some revitalization, one of the best ways to do that is to get your people on mission, get them planting out. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. It is going to be a little bit longer webinar. It's going to start at 9, and it's going to go to about noon. And we will have a break right there in the middle just to make it easier. But if you can't make the live webinar, you will want to check out the replay. And the way that you can get access to the replay is to actually sign up for the webinar. And those are the people that we are going to forward the replay information to. So again, churchplanterwebinar.com, and that is tomorrow, 9 a.m.
And, you know, it used to be considered like, you know, people talk about success in church planting if you planted a church that didn't die, right? Like 70% of church plants fail. But really, you're not considered a successful church plant if you're a church that starts and ends with itself. In other words, if you're an inward-focused church plant. One of the biggest dangers is for a church planter, he's focusing so much on his church plant, maybe he has never done it before, and he's focusing so much on that he doesn't hardwire his DNA into that church plant to being a multiplication church plant. Obviously, the goal is to reproduce yourself, to make disciples, but your church needs to be a model of that. So that's what we're going to talk about. Even if you're a first-time church planter, how do you hardwire your church plant, your first-time church plant, to be a church plant that goes beyond itself? And that's what we're going to cover. It's going to be awesome. Dave Ferguson, you know, like we said before, he's bringing the napkins. If you don't know Dave's work, then you don't know what that means. If you want to find out, tune in, and we're going to have all kinds of cool stuff. We're also going to unveil Jump School on that, which is our training course for church planners, and we're looking forward to telling you about that as well.
So before we get in with today's topic, we got an email here. We actually have gotten a lot of emails because we finally figured out how to download all the emails that people get. Thanks for knocking into the desk. That's not going to be allowed. Boom. In everyone's ear. We finally figured out how to download from Apple everyone's email. So when you sign up for the magazine, you get a free subscription, and then Apple says, hey, would you like to share your email and your zip code with the publishers of the magazine? And I don't know, like a third of the people or maybe a half of the people say yes. And we've never done anything with it. So actually, if you signed up last year, we actually waited too long. So Apple won't give us your email. So we had our assistant go through at the beginning of the year or download from the beginning of the year everyone's email and put it into our email list. And so we've been getting replies back from people, and some of them are just classic. I mean, some of the best, funniest things I've ever seen. You know, didn't someone say something about, but I've got my clothes on or something like that? Yeah, I listen to your podcast, but I'm fully clothed when I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, classic lines that you can tell people are actually listening to the podcast. But we got another email here, and this is from White Tyrone, who we've talked about. White Tyrone handles advertising and sales for Church Planner Magazine and the Church Planner Podcast. And if you'd like to advertise in the magazine or on the podcast, you can always reach White Tyrone at Tyrone@churchplannermag.com.
But, or WhiteTyrone@churchplannermag.com.
Yeah, but you know, our forwarder emails have not been working that well lately. So you want to be sure about it, go to Tyrone@churchplannermag.com. So he emailed us this morning. He's over in Florida. We're in California. And this is going to be a tag team email because I'm going to start it off, and Peyton's going to he's going to read the second paragraph.
Oh, okay.
Because
I think you take this whole one. I got something else I'm going to share.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm not going to read it word for word because he actually mentions he's working on three different deals, and I don't want to put pressure on them by saying their name. So and I don't want to give them free advertising on the podcast. They haven't advertised with us yet.
That's true.
That's it.
They're not paying for this. So, not yet.
So he writes, guys, please pray for any names to come in this month. Oh, and this one too. But this guy over here, he's deciding next week. And this one over here is in the process of making change. I don't know what that means. They have to decide to call back. And then he writes this. This is a classic White Tyrone line. He goes, now, let's be realistic about this. Pete, I'm sure you'll pray, albeit quietly and not in front of others. Peyton, I expect that you'll pray very hard about these deals and throw in the caveat, if it's your will. You'll put the prayer mantra of all great Calvary Chapel guys who have faith but give God a way out if it doesn't work. I, on the other hand, am Pentecostal, so I'll probably pray in tongues to edify my inner man, start to dance after I turn on my favorite praise music, dress up in my Creflo Dollar suit, and start strutting around as I call the deals in.
Come on, Lord, show me $100!
Okay, truth be told, I don't have a decent Creflo Dollar suit, but I'm starting to shake as I pray in tongues. Pray and let's do some business. I thought that was the funniest email ever.
You know, and it just goes to show you always need a Pentecostal salesman.
I love
it,
man.
You're going to do it right, man.
Pete, I'm sure you'll pray, albeit quietly and not in front of others.
Absolutely. Now, White Tyrone definitely listens to the podcast. I told him today I was going to let him peer review my next book, so he could tell me before I publish it how much it sucks and allow me time to change it.
I like it.
Yeah. So this week I ended up talking to Ed Stetzer on Facebook. He opened up Q&A and he said, I'm going to try this out. And so people were writing in stuff like, oh, you know, Ed, I'm in a rural community and I've got, you know, this situation with church planting. And so I thought, well, I'll ask Ed a question. And so I asked him, who would win in a fight? You with a piano wire, Francis Chan with a knife, Mark Driscoll with the spoon, or Rick Warren with ninja stars?
And the answer?
He actually answered me. His answer was ninja stars, greater range. I wrote him back, you have answered wisely again, my sensei. That's why you listen to Ed Stetzer, because he will answer even the hardest church planning questions.
I love it. Yeah, there are people on there like, oh, like today with the Church Planner Magazine Facebook page. I told you I put up that picture. It was like a guy is literally just sitting on a fold-up chair in front of a blank wall, and it says, still more exciting than watching soccer, which is classic, right? And I also sent that to Janosch, you know, who's over there in Germany. Apparently, yeah. Germany scored a bunch of goals. And so the talk on Facebook is, I think Germany is still scoring goals right now. And so anyway, this guy writes on there, he goes, what exactly does this have to do with church planting? You can tell he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Absolutely. He would know if he listened to the church planting podcast that we actually screw around for a good 15, 20 minutes, much to the chagrin of Joey Roper, which I've now got a theory about Joey Roper.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Here's my theory. You've heard us bag on Joey Roper. You've heard us bag on, like, anyone. If you write us or you email us or you call into the show, chances are we're going to bag on you, right? Because we just love our listeners. So here's the deal. We have Joey Roper, early on, we get this thing from Joey Roper, and he's like, you know, you guys, it just happened to be, you know, like 13 minutes before you got into actual church planting content. And so me and Pete, you know, thought about that, and we're like, well, that needs to be the case from now on, right? Just to make Joey Roper mad. And truth be told, we love Joey Roper until...
But we've never actually met Joey Roper.
Yeah, until... I think that's
an important thing to note here.
Yeah, yeah, we started getting wise, because Pete... got referred by, I'm air quoting now, Joey Roper. He got referred to Janosch, who wanted to make some money, who responded to Pete's appeal that, hey, church planner, want to make some money? Get in touch with me. It was kind of your Tom Vu style appeal, you know, want to make a lot of money. do you want big toys? But anyways, Pete put this thing out, and Janosch, who was Joey Roper's assistant, quote unquote, responded and said, yeah, man, you know, I'll work for you. And I've got this theory now, because occasionally Janosch will say things like, oh, you know, Joey noticed that, you know, you guys this week took 17 minutes. At a certain point, I went, hey, Pete, you know what? I think the jig's up, man. I don't think Joey Roper actually exists. I think Joey Roper is Janosch's puppet. He's like Janosch's fake ID. That when Janosch has to say something, he doesn't want to be awkward. He doesn't want to make people uncomfortable. He creates this persona named Joey Roper. And so it's a fake idea. It's like, what's that one?
Joey Roper doesn't actually exist is what you're getting.
Absolutely.
At.
He's not real.
So the Facebook page has all been faked by Janosch?
Absolutely. Joey Roper doesn't. We're on to you, Janosch. Joey Roper doesn't even exist. He's just your puppet for when you need to say difficult, awkward things.
And that's why Janosch is always saying, hey, what about us assistants? We're the ones actually doing all the work. Really what it is he's the one doing all the work because Joey doesn't exist.
Absolutely. You know, and when you're hearing, you know, the messages from Joey Roper, air quotes again, you're actually hearing Janosch. He's just speeding it up like 1.5 speed, you know, he's speaking through a filter, and that's it, man. So we're on to you. So next time we hear, hey, Joey noticed about the podcast, it's not gonna work with us anymore, Janosch.
We know the deal.
So, okay, our topic today is a topic which is, I don't know, it's kind of, you know, we have good topics and we have sucky topics. Now, this is a good topic, but it's a good sucky topic. So it's not like a sucky topic like, how do I start a 501c3 nonprofit corporation? That's a sucky, sucky topic. This is a good sucky topic because it's a good topic. It's something you want to hear, but it's about something sucky.
I don't even remember what you said the topic was going to be.
I knew you didn't. Here's the deal. We're going to talk today about what to do when people leave your church plan.
Yeah.
So, okay, so here's the deal. People are going to leave your church plan. You need to know that. Oftentimes, you know, I tell people that the hardest part about a church plant is the second year. Now, this is what happens in the second year. The reason it's the hardest thing about it is when you start a church plant, right, you throw out all this vision. You're vision casting. People are coming on board, and they're getting all excited, and you're painting this picture. You've got the faith to see what no one else can see. You've got the Hebrews 11, faith is confidence in things hope for, things not seen. So you are casting all this vision, you're spinning these yarns, you're telling them what's going to happen. And the picture that they build up in their mind is that, like, in a month's time, you're going to be filling stadiums. And you try to tell them, you try to warn them, you know, hey, no, no, it doesn't work that way. It's like, you know, the slow burn. It's not, you know, overnight. You've heard the church planting stories through the, you know, guys that sell millions of copies, but that is the exception. And so in the second year, what happens is people go, yeah, yeah, we're going to leave. The church down the road has programs. So we were listening to Hugh Halter today. We were at the Bible conference with Plant LB, Stadia, LA Church Planting Mission. Again, like Janusz, they're kind of all the same thing. They're like the Joey Roper of the Stadia organization, the fake puppet. But the deal is that they were talking. They had Hugh Halter, and Hugh told the greatest story about people leaving. He said, yeah, so, you know, there was this couple, and they left, and they came up to me, and they said, hey, just want to let you know we're leaving. And, well, here's what happened. Sunday morning, something happened, like they couldn't get to church. I don't remember what it was. And he goes, and we were walking around. We just went for a walk with the family, and we rounded a corner. We're walking down the main street. We round a corner, and we saw a church, and we decided just to pop in, and they had a ball pit, and our kids really like it. We think we're going to go back there.
So moral of the story is get a ball pit for your church.
Yeah. Get a ball pit and people won't leave. They'll never, ever leave. And that church downtown knew this. That is the church planning strategy that we're trying to teach you on the Church Planning Podcast. Now, if you didn't just switch us off, here's the deal. The funny thing is that, you know, Hugh's just pausing and everyone's laughing, you know, and then he says, you know, yeah, like the our community, Adullam, you know, we actually kind of like, we saved their marriage. You know, we got their family back on track, all this stuff. And he goes, and the guy's looking at me, he's going, I know what you're going to say. I know it's a ball pit. We're leaving the church for a ball pit. And Hugh just goes, cool, you know, whatever. And I think as church planners, you were going to have people. That's actually a good way to lose somebody. You know, they want a ball pit. Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, that's a great win. I'll tell you why, because the alternative is normally people go, you suck. You know, I hate you. Here's 15 things that I've written down every week since I've been here that's wrong with this church and wrong with you. Those ones suck more. So losing a guy over a ball pit, and the guy said, hey, man, I love you. And, you know, I know it seems weird. And, you know, he was respectful of it. But there are all kinds of reasons why people leave churches. And so we're going to talk about, you know, some what to do, who to chase, when not to chase, when to let people go, how to handle it, what your attitude should be, what you can do. Because sometimes when someone leaves, you worry about, you know, are we going to have an arterial leak? Is there going to be a hemorrhage out the back door now? All those things are important.
That's interesting. You know, I can see a lot of people saying you're doing church wrong. You know, you're not spiritual enough, you're not this enough, you're not that enough, because people get so hung up on that stuff. And I can see them using that as the excuse as to why they're leaving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so here's the thing, like in a church plant, there's so many reasons to leave a church plant, right? Like your Sunday school is never really good, right? I mean,
or the other thing is, like, look at our church. The pastor's wearing a t-shirt and shorts up on stage. That could offend a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess.
Not our community, it wouldn't offend.
But that's the thing, is those are the people, believe it or not, there are people you want to lose. I know that just sounds absolutely like the opposite of what most church planners think, because they're going, whoa, whoa, wait a second. Like, we're really small. Don't tell me, I can't afford to lose people. Man, we only got 20 people. Let me tell you something. Jesus turned the world upside down with 12 guys. He didn't go, oh man, how can I get as many? He did quality over quantity. That was always Jesus's thing. He takes 12 guys, he disciples those 12 guys, he splices his missional DNA into these 12 guys, and I would rather have 12 people that are absolutely on tack with where I'm going than have 50 people that have no clue. Make sense?
It does. It does. And, you know, I think probably the toughest thing for most church planners is, and we've talked about this on the show before, like losing people who are in your core team, losing people who are, you know, the foundational members of your church, if you will. And I think one of the things that I'm just so used to is in business, like being in straight commission only jobs and running straight commission companies, you know, with insurance and financial planning. It's like we expect people not to stick around because it's straight commission. And that's a tough deal, right? So it's like it's reached the point for me that it does not surprise me when someone quits. It's like, and usually they just fade away, right? They don't like, hey, this is too hard for me. It's usually like they stop coming to the meeting, the sales meeting, and, you know, no work's been turned in a month. And, you know, pretty soon, you know, we're getting notified by the state that their license has been canceled or something.
Yeah.
And, but I could see that being like one of the tougher things for most church planners. Like, I'm just thinking you've probably like the church planner has to go through it like in stages. First, it's the core team, right? And then it's, okay, well, you know, we've made it through. We've refined the core team, you know, and now the core of our church. And then you start to see those guys go. And that's probably got to be – it just starts to get old after a while, I would think. I'm used to it, but I could see a pastor getting tired of it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm always shocked when people stay. I got to be honest. I don't worry when people leave. And when you want to talk about like who to chase, I will be honest with you. I never chase people, ever. The only people that I chase is when it's so out of character that I'm concerned. You know, has something gone wrong? Mm. Have we failed you in some way? If I have failed somebody, and even if they don't come back, if I owe them an apology, let's say somebody, you know, their child's in the hospital or something horrific happens and we've let them down. We have not shown them we care for them. You know, as leaders, we haven't gone and prayed over them or visited them and we don't see them again. I've got to own that. And I chase those guys because when they leave, I have to tell them, hey, I failed you and I get why you're leaving. In fact, I would say it's very, very rare that I tell people, I don't understand. Why are you leaving? If somebody's being really nasty, I get why they're leaving. And I usually assume that's your problem, you know, and you're going to do that wherever you go. And that's cool, right? If somebody's got a valid complaint and grump against me, I usually own it. Even if they're on their way out, I go, oh, yeah, no, man, I suck. I told you I sucked as a pastor, you know, because I'm more apostolic. I don't got to try to pretend to be super pastor. I have people there that will shepherd them. And as I've said before, we have our COGS, which are like, you know, our little missional communities that meet around, you know, different parts of the city. And all of our pastoral problems are worked out in the COGS, right? So I noticed years ago that people that normally felt the need to call me as a pastor and say, oh, pastor, I got, you know, I need to talk to you. If they were in a COG, they didn't call. It was, I started only literally, once I started up all these communities, I realized that people only called me when they weren't in a COG with a pastoral crisis. Otherwise, it got worked out. They got pastoral care in the COG. And so that, in many ways, does most of the pastoring for me. And so when people are like all upset, like, I don't feel anyone cares for me, my first question is, are you in a COG, a community of grace? Well, no, I'm not. Well, before you go, why don't you plug into that? Because I will guarantee you, your perspective will change once you get into one of those. So, for example, the story of the man that works at the gas station on the edge of town. The guy pulls in and he says, hey, what are the people like around here? The guy behind the counter says, well, I suppose they're, you know, well, tell me about the people where you came from. And he goes, oh, man, they were horrible people. You know, they didn't love you. They didn't talk to you. They made you feel like nothing and blah, blah, blah. And he said, unfortunately, I expect you'll find him the same here. Next customer rolls in. He says, hey, I'm new in town. What are the people like in this town? And he says, well, what were they like where he came from? And he said, oh, man, they were the best. Some of my best friends in the world. In fact, it's been really hard to leave them, but they were the most giving, kindest, welcoming people on the planet. And that guy says, well, I suppose you'll probably find him the same here as he did where he came from. And I think that's so true, you know?
I feel like adding on Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
Yeah, the best deep thought with Jack Handy ever, if you never saw SNL, Saturday Night Live, back in the day, it was this little segment used to come on, Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy. And one of them, my favorite one, was, my nephew's a spoiled brat. One day I told him, I'm going to take you to Disneyland. That morning I showed up at his house. I took him to an old burned down warehouse. Oh, look, I said, Disneyland burned down. He cried and cried. Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy. That's the best one ever. I love that one.
Oh, my gosh. You know, let me ask you this. What does, how did they get started in church with the whole, like, Wednesday night service and, you know, that kind of, like, as opposed to the missional communities that were seen in, like Rick Warren's church. I mean, he talked about their, you know, small groups, and he's like, you know, it's like I've got 7,000 house churches.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, but the whole, you know, I don't know, is this what the missional movement is? Is that type of thing? I mean, because I didn't, like, the church that I grew up in, we did not have those. Like, we had a Wednesday night service.
Well, you know, like, this is the problem with going to a midweek. And if you have a midweek study, I'm going to challenge you on this, because what you've done is you've duplicated your Sunday morning, and there's really no functionality that you're getting out of a midweek study except to showcase your preaching gift again, right? And you do that on Sunday. So the question becomes, and really I think the midweek meeting originally started up to be a prayer meeting, but Christians suck at praying in groups. And I don't know about you, but unless the Spirit's really in
Pete, I'm sure you'll pray, albeit quiet and not in front of anyone.
But here's the thing. Christians, if the Spirit of God is not in that prayer meeting, and people are just there because they feel they should be, those are the worst prayer meetings on the planet. And I think eventually people are like, you know, this isn't very fun. And then you got the guy that goes on for 10 minutes, right? And kind of kills, by the way, long prayers kill prayer meetings. So if you are going to have a prayer meeting, tell your people, please keep your prayers to 30 seconds or a minute. Like Spurgeon said once, he said, you know, the guy that went on, he was praying, and in the first 5 minutes, I prayed with him. The second 5 minutes, I prayed for him. And in the third 5 minutes,
I prayed against him.
And so, you know, but I think eventually the functionality that you could get out of it, they just thought, yeah, this isn't very fun. And, but I'm telling you, I've been in prayer meetings and gone 5 hours, and I thought it was 45 minutes because the Spirit, my leadership team, we used to pray, man, and we would just, the Spirit would come, and it was awesome. And I think if you're in a situation where the Spirit's really moving, those are great times. But I think midweek studies, just at some point, somebody just went, yeah, you know what? I can teach better and use this time, and I can teach in another book of the Bible. But the reality is that what you got to think about is the functionality. We take communion in our cogs. We have awesome discussion in our cogs. We let people talk about their problems. We do have teaching, but we try to keep it short. We hammer out sometimes controversial things in our cogs that maybe we couldn't hammer out on a Sunday morning. So everything is very flexible. We alternate. We might go for through a short epistle for a number of weeks. We might go through a video series a number of weeks. We're taking communion. We're praying and laying hands on one another. We're doing things that don't exactly fit into the context. But I'm telling you, that's where the pastoral stuff happens. That's where the kaboom happens. You know what I mean?
I do. I get it.
And Sunday for us is outreach. So going back to people leaving, I always ask them, do you belong to a cog? And it, usually they don't, you know, and those are the people that we tend to lose. So, but, you know.
How often would you say you lose people who lead the cog? Like, does burnout happen? Do they reach a point where they're like, I got to be done?
I can honestly say I've never lost a person's led a cog.
Really?
Yeah. I've lost one couple in this last church plant who hosted a cog, which meant it was just in their house.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But people who lead the cog, no. No.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So get everyone to lead a cog.
Get everyone to lead a cog. And
if you guys haven't listened to the episode that we did on Rick Warren and what we learned from our dinner date with Rick Warren, you got to go back and listen to that one, because that's one of the secrets to growing a church, reaching Absolutely. The lost, is through the use of the small groups. And he talked about how they did that and how other churches have done that and the impact that it had. So
I think the number one thing when people are leaving your church is to have a good attitude. I think that your attitude as a leader, this is such a deep rabbit hole. It's normally the leader that's the problem when people are leaving. I don't see it as a problem. If people leave, let's say they come to me and like they say, you know, the ball pit, man, I don't look at them and judge them, because look, I know me. And I know if I'm leading a church, I probably wouldn't go to the church I lead. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think so highly of myself that, why isn't everybody coming to my, I know me. My wife knows me. You know, I always think, God, why do you use me? You know, like, that's crazy. So when people say they're going to leave, I'm always like, well, there's one less sucker in my church. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally, I'm always appalled that God leaves me. I'm always shocked that people stay. Our church plant's a little crazy. To reach a loss, you got to get a little bit radical. I know it's not for everybody. So I don't assume that people come to my church and go, this is awesome. So like, we got Steve in the room here, right? We've talked to you about Steve the barbecuer. And so Steve's in here. He, you know, he's listening. He's the silent witness in the back, right? Say, hey, Steve.
Hey.
I don't even know if the mic picked it up.
Yeah. So, I'll pretend. Hey, that's what Steve sounds like. So here's the deal. So Steve was saying to me this morning, he's like, man, he was just talking about everything God's teaching. He's reading a Dallas Willard book. And then we took him to the Bible conference today and perfectly tied in. He's like, man, this is totally the spirit. But the deal is that on the way he was saying, yeah, you know, I'm telling everyone all the time how awesome our church is. Now, I'm being honest with you. Like, I stand back and go, that's the spirit, man. Because I'm not building this church. It's not like, yeah, the church of Peyton built. It's literally, you know, I'm hardly even there now. So if the church is awesome, maybe it's awesome because I left. You know, I left my own church. In fact, I'm planning to leave my church from the day I first planted it. So the reality is, I told him, I go, Steve, you're kind of like the guy whose like girlfriend is really, really ugly. And I know my wife's going to get mad at me for saying this, but like, your girlfriend's really, really ugly, but you're talking about what a babe she is all the time. Cause when the normal average Christian comes to our church from a mega church, they come, they hear about our church. The idea sounds really good. Oh yeah. Reaching the lost. Oh yeah. Street church. And then they get there and it's ugly. And they're like, yeah, I don't think I want to go to this.
Well, it's ugly in a lot of ways. I mean, it's actually aesthetically ugly.
I mean, look at the preacher, right?
No, no, no. But I mean, aesthetically, our church is ugly.
Yeah.
Like, the school is ugly. I think the fact that we meet outside is always so stinking hot. I was so glad when we met inside this last Sunday, because it's so hot right now.
Yeah.
It's like Florida hot. That's how hot it is.
It was pretty hot. It takes a lot for us to go inside, and we need to go inside. So here's the deal, right? Like I said, okay, so it's back to the first year. What I said in the beginning, that first year, everyone's still kind of pumped. And then second year, they're like, hey, we've been doing this a year already. And this is hard work, man. And reaching the lost, you know, it actually takes a sacrifice. We actually have to be in the film. We don't get to just watch the film. Like, we have to be in the film. And some people don't want to be in the movie, right? They want to read about what God used to do. They don't want to be a part of what God's doing, right? That's on my next book, by the way. Cha-ching! That's from, you're not going to cut that out, are you?
No, which book?
That's it's a book that's, I've just put a book into my agent.
I actually think at this point, you're just making stuff up.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Oh, that's in my next book. Because you're like, this is my third book. This is my fourth book.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you've written one.
No, 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 I've got three. I'm writing the third. Which is, the second one is Jump School, which comes out, what, September-ish?
September? Jump School, the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the program, because the program's coming out tomorrow, churchplannerwebinar.com.
Yes, that's right. But the book should be out in September. And by the way, if you do join the Jump School course, you get it free, amongst other things, which we'll tell you about later. But the third book is God Save the Church. And so, you know, basically, a lot of people don't want to be a part of what God's doing.
You know, I get that. But you know what? Here's the thing for me. Like if the whole God thing is real, then you... It's like you're either going to be with it, you want to be on board with it, or it's like you just got to ignore that the whole thing even exists. Like, I don't want to just go and watch church, because if God's real, then I need to be a part of it. Like, yeah. I need, because one day I'm going to be held accountable to God, right? I want to stand before him. What am I going to be like? Well, you know, thanks God. It was a great show. It was fun watching, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks for giving me tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're losing the people who are just there to watch, which is what we're taught in church, yeah, right? Like, right, every church I've ever gone to, it's a show. You go, you watch, you see what happens, and you leave.
Well, because we're an interactive church, like, there is ministry opportunity for everybody. So we got this guy, he's homeless, right? He's been with us for a number of years. You know, he needed glasses, so we gave him some money, get some glasses. He can see now. He's got a place to live right now. So, you know, and he tells us, he goes, hey man, you know, I see him Sunday. He's walking around. He's like, yeah, I'm kind of ticked. I was supposed to meet someone here and they haven't been for a number of weeks. They said they're going to help me. And, I said, well, what's going on, man? He goes, well, I got a place. I'm sleeping on the floor. And, you know, he got his backpack ripped off a number of weeks ago. So, like, everything was taken. Like, we, you know, this is someone who literally has nothing, right? And, you know, he struggles with a little, you can't tell, but, you know, he struggles with a little bit of, bipolar. He's stable. Every time we've seen him, we'd never seen him unstable. But he's a quiet guy, real cool. You know, I have a good conversation with you. And he was like, look, man, I'm sleeping on the floor and it really hurts. And 3 weeks ago, someone told me they're going to help me and no one's helped me. And I said, well, dude, thanks for not just taking off. You know, we care about you. You know what? I'll find someone. You know, you don't ever think we don't care about you. So sure enough, you know, I hook him up with someone who's not a leader, just a person, just a Christian who's invested. And I just mention it. And he goes, dude, I'll go get him some furniture this week. So he finds a used sofa. He finds a desk, because that's all he wanted. He's like, I just need a place to like sleep on. They go in there. The guy literally has not one thing, and that not one stick of furniture, nothing. Not a pot, not a pan, not a microwave, nothing. And they go in and just take them. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you're at a church where you get, like, I remember he texted me. He goes, hey, I'm on my way. I got a sofa and I got a desk. He was so excited. And my intern, I got an intern over from Wales right now who's training to be a church planner. He's going with him. I'm thinking, that is true ministry. That's where my intern needs to be right now, is in a car delivering furniture to a guy who has no one to help him. Up two flights of stairs with a sofa.
Oh, gnarly. Oh, that's just...
But if you're involved, you know, the guy was like, thanks. You know, that was life change for that dude. He was actually saying, man, my back's going out because I'm sleeping. And... Yeah, you get me started on another topic, but you're not going to leave if you're serving. You're doing that. And I'm not talking church chores, right? Like, hey, could you flip the switch, you know, during the service? Could you adjust the air conditioning? Could you run the overheads? Those are church chores, right? No one goes home feeling really fulfilled when they're doing church chores. But this is ministry. This is true service. Remember that the first ministers or servants that were put on in the book of Acts was, hey, people are starving. Let's take seven guys, set them aside, and let's serve the people. Let's get involved in people's lives. And boom, that's what people are craving. We have made church all about entertainment and fun, and people just aren't amused anymore. They're not thrilled by going to church and getting entertained. We've substituted the adventure of getting on mission and getting involved with people's lives with fun and entertainment. And I'm sorry, but we got entertainment crammed at us all the time. The last thing people want is more fun and entertainment. Mm. What they want is adventure. And they know it because the Holy Spirit's been deposited. He's invaded their souls. He's in them and he's busting to get out. And when I see somebody who's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to leave. And the reason is that they're bored. That can't happen in our church. That can't be the reason, because there's plenty of mission. Holy Spirit has ample opportunity at our church to be unleashed in your life. Big time.
Hmm. I get it, man. I do.
You want me to talk more, don't you?
I don't really know what else to say on that subject.
Well, there's more. But wait, there's more. I talked about your attitude as a pastor. You all know that, you know, when someone comes to you, let's just get really practical for a second, right? When somebody comes to you and goes, Pastor, I'm leaving, right? And, you know, sometimes they're like the ugly people. You know the ugly people, right?
Yeah, I can imagine, because, see, if I were leaving a church, I would just leave the church.
Yeah, you disappear.
I would disappear.
I only call people if I'm worried about them. If I haven't seen them for a number of weeks, I might call them. And if and often it's, you know, if they miss a week, fine. I'm not like, you got to be careful with this. You have to be careful with calling people because they miss a Sunday. And I know in some cultures, like in Wales, if I called them, that would be really caring. But I tell my congregation, look, you're all big boys and big girls. If I don't see you a week, I assume you had a family engagement. I assume you had some. I'm not going to chase you up for that. If I see you gone 2 weeks, I'll wonder. But if I see you gone 3 weeks, you'll probably hear from me. Because then you've either left or you're in trouble. But we all have phones. We all have this. You know, I mean, if you need something, call me. Shoot, you know. If someone dies in your family, call me. I'm there. So I assume that everybody's big boys and girls. They don't need me to chase them up, number one. But if they need me, I'm on the other end of the phone. So we kind of made that agreement as a church, and it worked. Plus, you know, they had COGS. If they didn't make it on Sunday, maybe they went to COG. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so what happened was, when I called people, I guess what I was going to say is, the ugly people come and they talk to you and they tell you they're leaving. And sometimes you can get a little bit defensive. You start feeling feelings of, well, maybe I failed these people, or they say something that's kind of critical of the church or the way you do ministry, or maybe you personally. And your temptation is to defend yourself. And like I said, for me, I just don't do that. I don't defend the church. If it's a misunderstanding, I correct the misunderstanding, but I never beg them to stay, ever. I used to make it super hard for Christians to come to my church, because I was used to this. I was used to Christians coming for a few months, us not quote unquote meeting their needs, which meant they wanted me to babysit them, make them feel really special. And I stopped pastoring and babysitting Christians years ago. I now train missionaries. So, and if my missionaries are struggling, man, I'm there for them, right? I'm number one, Johnny on the spot, to counsel them, to be there for them. But the reality is, if it was a matter of, oh, this place isn't loving, I just say, okay, well, sorry, you know, did you go to a COG? No. Okay. I think you would have found it different. You know, you can always try that before you go. I mean, shoot, you know, I'd hate to see you go, but I leave it there. I don't beg them. I just let it. They're big boys and big girls. And church planner, don't get so desperate that when somebody says to you, I'm leaving, you make it like, oh, we can't survive without you. You know, whatever will we do? Look, the church can survive without you, right? If God's in it. You don't need anybody, right? Two by two. A church planting, nobody is indispensable. No minister is indispensable. No church members. And I had a guy who came. He was given $1,500 a month. He was a rich guy. And I remember the day that he left us to go for one of our sister church plants. And I was sad to see him go, because he was taking his pocketbook with him. But he didn't leave under a cloud. He left, you know, in a good way. But I remember thinking, well, Lord, you brought that guy, you know, for that amount of time. That was cool. Like, we needed that guy. That was awesome. But obviously we don't need him anymore, because he's going to a church that probably needs him more now. And I think you need to have that attitude. Don't let your desperation show. Even if you feel deep inside like, oh man, that's going to be hard, just tell him, be honest. Oh man, I'm going to miss you. You know, you've been such a blessing. Always leave them on a positive. Don't rebuke them on the way out. Don't slam them. Don't criticize them. Don't tell them, well, you know, you weren't very committed. Don't give any parting shots. Even if they're attacking the crap out of you, you just are nice to them. You just say, well, you know, I'm sorry you feel I failed you. I really hope you find a good church. And I'm just telling you, it makes life so. I don't care what they're doing. That's how I do.
Yeah, I remember I mentioned to you, I met this gal just over a year ago because it was right before the magazine came out. It probably was over a year ago because we hadn't done the Kickstarter campaign yet for the magazine. And she and her best friend were at this meeting, and I happened to like there was no place to eat, right? So we're all like sitting at coffee tables in the bar, and like waiters are having to come over to serve us at like a little teeny tiny round coffee table, right? And so there's like four of us sitting there. None of us know each other except for the two girls know each other. And all of a sudden, you know, and I notice that they pray right before they eat. You know, I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And you and I had just talked all the way in about doing a Kickstarter campaign to launch the magazine. And then we start talking, and like I told you later, the hairs on the back of my neck started to go up because as they were talking, they were like, basically telling me their story. And I'm like, these chicks are church planters.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know where that fits in with my theology. Right. And I'm like, but these chicks are totally church planters. Well, they ended up, you know, I wouldn't say we became good friends, but we definitely got to know each other there. And then I met up with them maybe a couple months later at another event. And we started talking. My dog, if you hear the heavy breathing, it's my dog.
Oh, it's not me.
She knows it's about dinner time.
Hey, we haven't done any sound effects. Speaking of that.
What? Check, please. So,
come on, give me a Wookie.
No, I got to give you a... I have to say, I agree with Pete.
Speaking of which, Jonathan Ferguson did say that he repents. He created a monster, and he's sorry he ever recorded that.
He did a hashtag, I no longer agree with Pete. And then like another hashtag, I repent of my evil ways or something like that.
So this week, you guys need to tweet out hashtags, I agree with Pete, or I no longer agree with Pete. That's what I want to see out there. We're going to have the battle of agreeing with Pete. Let it begin.
I love it. But anyway, so the second time I met up with these gals, they were telling me how their current pastor was like all offended at them for what they were doing because he saw it as they were taking people away from his church, even though they weren't. Like no one from the church was going with them. They were just going into these areas and a church plant was starting.
Yeah.
But he took it as, you know, why aren't you bringing them back to our church? And they were like, we're meeting them where they're at. I mean, that's what we're there to do.
Well, we had this week, right? Like I went to a pastor's conference and there's a ministry called Plur, which they go out and minister to the raves. So there's a guy who's connected with Chris. Chris is involved with Plur. And
who's Chris?
Chris Langham.
Okay.
Which is like the teaching pastor. Yeah. At the church. And so this guy was at the Plur booth and I didn't recognize him, but he's a guy named Wayne, and he serves his butt off when he's there, right? And he's just kind of quiet guy in the background, this and that. And he's a real blessing. And so I started talking to him, and I said, man, have you been there? Because he's kind of invisible when he's there. He's like, no. He goes, I started going to Bixby Park Sunday mornings and handing out food to the people in Bixby Park. Now, and he said, he goes, you know, I just, after going to Bixby Park, you know, in the afternoons occasionally, he goes, I just thought, well, what are we doing on Sunday morning? It was funny because he goes, I mean, going once a month, you know, that's not very much. Now, I could have been really defensive. I did point out to him, well, even if you're going Sunday morning, now it's just, you know, Sunday afternoon here and there, and now just a Sunday morning. I mean, you're going to run into that problem no matter what. But I didn't tell him, hey, dude, we'll come back, you know, and we'll that's not the point. We want to replant back into Bixby. And I just feel this guy's just running ahead under probably the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. If he is, it's kind of like we get that mentality of the disciples where they're like, Lord, we saw a guy casting out demons and we told him to stop. Well, you know, because he's not with us. Well, if this guy wants to go into Bixby Park and feed people, we're already thinking we want to replant there. So I'm like, more power to you, man. And I go, that's awesome. I told him, well, we're going to replant there. You know, I don't care if he comes back to us. If he's out there now doing something, that's awesome. He's a big boy. He'll get fed somehow. I don't give him the lecture about, well, you need fellowship and this and that. I actually felt his impetus was right. And that is, I want to do more for those people out there. Mm-hmm. Why am I going to tamp down on that? So I just throw out there, well, you know, we're going to plan. If he wants to be a part of it, great. But why would I pressure him to, he knows what church is. He knows what church he needs to be in. Not necessarily ours. And this was kind of where I was going when I said the rabbit hole goes deep. When people come to you, A, don't get defensive. And B, don't treat them like they've done something wrong by not coming to your church. Look, there are a million good churches out there. We are not the only one. We are also not the only church on mission. We're not the church doing it best. I'm sure of that. We're just where we are, doing what we can, stumbling and failing forward by the grace of God, hoping we impact and change lives. And so I don't walk around thinking our church is, you know, the holy grail of churches, and you're so lucky to have found us. I walk around thinking, man, you were a blessing as long as you were here, Wayne. You served your butt off, and now you're over there. I actually laid my hands on and prayed for him. And so let me just pray for you. See the people leaving as people sent out. Pray for them. So I always say to them, well, what you gained here, take with you to the next place. Surely they will have things we didn't, but you now have taken something from us that they won't have.
Let me ask you, how is it affected when you as a pastor, and I don't even know if you can answer this because I know you don't know what everybody tithes, but like if you were a pastor and you knew what people tithe, like how does that then affect you when you're like, oh, dude, that guy's leaving? Great, there goes $1,000. Oh, that guy's leaving? Oh, there goes 500.
It's so funny because we're a ghetto church. I've often thought things like, well, maybe if they're leaving, I ask them to still tithe until they find a home church. They're going to be looking for a while.
Do you?
I've thought about it. And I've never.
I love that.
I've never had the
guts. What are they going to say? No? Worst case scenario, it's no different.
Well, that's it. And I guess at the end of the day, when I'm talking to them, I'm more concerned about them, you know? And so I don't want to give the wrong impression or anything.
That
and
you're out for
it
their
could,
money?
No, but it could be kind of creepy, right?
I know you're leaving, but could you still tie?
Well, yeah. And I think it, but you
no,
know.
No, not creepy at all.
I end on a positive with people. And I always tell them, hey, if you, unless, you know, there are people that leave under a cloud and I am so glad to see them go. I can say there was one couple that left under a cloud. And I didn't say, well, you know, if you ever want to come back, the door's open, you know? But the door is open. Because if they come back, I'm going to have to get over my feelings, right? Of, oh, man, you really kicked me in the nuts. You know what I mean? And that will be good for me. You know what I mean? Because there were people that have hurt me. But even then, it's not personal. I don't make it about me. To me, it's about the mission. And if you don't want to be a part of this mission, that's cool. Just be on mission somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I always tell people, well, hey, you're a blessing while you're here. And if you go on and you come back, we'd love to have you.
Do you think, though, it's harder for the pastor that knows that everyone's tithing? Does that thought go through a pastor? Because I'm not a pastor, right? I have no idea. I don't know what they're thinking.
Probably. I would imagine it is hard. I don't know, man. Like, I think as a church planner, if your livelihood is tied up with people's tithing, I'm not saying like I take a partial wage from the church. That's great. But, and so does the other teaching pastor. But here's the deal. My income is not dependent and I never take that for granted. If the money dries up and surely we've come very close to the money drying up, I don't let that affect. So I purposely don't know who gives and I don't
right.
Want
I know,
know
you don't. And I think that would actually make it easier because you never know.
It touches everything though.
Like I remember at our vision meeting, you said something. This is like the vision meeting at the very beginning. We were at the Holiday Inn when the church hadn't even really started yet. And you made some crack and you're like, oh, you got to be nice to Pete because he's a big tither. And I started laughing so hard because I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, I'm like, you got the wrong guy on that one.
Yeah, but that comment made you a good tither. So I was just setting you up, pal.
Not at that time, it did. Yeah. At that time, I was broke. I had nothing. Awesome.
Well, and so the thing is that, you know, I think it makes you creepy. right? And I don't want to be creepy. I don't want to think about people as what I can get from them. One of the things I'm putting in Jump School, my next book, cha-ching, book number two.
Killing me.
Yeah, you like that? So I'm just building anticipation, Pete. That's all. Well, it's not working for you.
I don't know about the book, but I can tell you about the program. The program's rock solid. We're going to tell you all about that tomorrow.
But one of the things, and I may have even mentioned this, because this really impacted me. I was watching Banner Brothers, and of course, the whole thing's themed around World War II paratroopers and, you know, 101st Airborne parachuting in. And there's a scene where the officer is gambling with the enlisted men. And he wins. The officer wins. Yeah. And Winners is upset. And when they're walking away, he says, "Don't ever let me catch you doing that again." And he goes, "What? Gambling with the men? What's wrong with that?" And he goes, "Winning." He said, "Don't ever put yourself in a position where you can take from these men." And I think that's the attitude. I think that is leadership. You're not using them. You're not a hireling. You are their shepherd spiritually. It's lawful for you to take a wage. Paul lays that down to muzzle the ox while he's treading the grain. But you cannot view them as people that are there for you. When you start doing that, it gets funky. And I would say a lot of the responses and reactions that pastors have is because they're in the flesh. They're thinking, "Well, there goes my paycheck." How dare you look at people like that? You know what I'm saying? And I think often that's why they guilt people into staying, because there's nothing else for them to hold on to. I mean, if you read the New Testament, people move around. Priscilla and Aquila go from Rome to Corinth to, you know, wherever it was that they were somewhere else. People move around in the New Testament a lot. The people that, you know, greet so-and-so, I'm sending so-and-so to you. People move around. I would like personally to have people, maybe it came from ministering in a university town, I would like to have people that are transient, that I'm training up to go somewhere else. That's just how I think about my church. I don't want people to stay in my church forever. I'm hoping they go on to bigger and better things. And I don't mean church size. I mean that they're going to be on the frontiers, as today they're guys that they've come in as, you know, consumer spectator Christians, and they are so transforming that in a number of years, they're so different. They have to leave my church, but they have to leave my church because they're going out as missionaries. They can't stay anymore because they've been recipients, but now they need to be givers. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. They need to go give what they've gotten. As you have been, as you freely receive, now freely give. And so I'm training missionaries literally, and that's not lip service to me. You know, there are people like you who said, "Hey man, I think you should put me on the diaconate because I think I'm the only knucklehead that's going to stick around here." There will be people who stay and then and when praise
you said,
God.
And then when you said, "You know, I think it is time for us to put you on there," I'm like, I've thought about it more. I don't think God's calling me.
Absolutely. That sounds like you're going to sucker me into ministry. And everybody who listens to this podcast knows that God has Pete's number and it's eventually going to come up. We all know it, Pete.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's a matter of time. Man. I don't know what you're talking about.
That shut you up, didn't it?
It really did. Yeah.
Anything else to say? Because I think we've pretty much beat that dead horse. But
no, I think that was a lot of great information. And I could totally see that as being an issue. What do you do when people tell you they want to leave? Because again, just from my whole perspective, I would never tell you.
Yeah,
I'd just be like, "I'm gone. I'm done."
And that's okay. And there's certain people when they go, and I think I know why. I'm cool with that. There's other people that bugs me. Oh, why are they gone? They seem so happy here.
You know, here's the other thing, too. I've always gone to such big churches, they wouldn't know it when I did leave.
Yeah.
I never got it. Like, the church we went to before Refuge Huntington Beach, they didn't know when we left.
Yeah. I usually will give a shout out and say, "Hey, man, I heard you leave, you know, blah, blah, blah." And it just depends. Sometimes my wife does it. Sometimes I do it. And it's okay. It's okay for people to leave, guys. When I first formed a core team, it was like when Bill handed over the satellite campus. Refuge Long Beach was a satellite campus before it was a church plant. And it was in Emmanuel Presbyterian Church. There's about 25, 30 people. And I remember saying to Bill, and Bill's like my dad, man. So it was cool because I go, "Bill, I'll take this. But like, you've built this thing now. In a year and a half, you've got a satellite campus." Bill was on the radio. He's really famous. There are people live in Long Beach. They want to reach them. And they're like, "Our radio audience is over there and they've driven over here. So we don't want them to have to drive. We could probably start another church." A satellite campus thing was big. And I looked at Bill and I said, I am not a satellite campus guy. I'm a church planner and you've done all the fun stuff. If I got a core of people, but I said, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make them into a church plant. And what's going to happen is I'm going to wreck. I'm not going to mean to, but I'm going to inadvertently wreck what you've built in order to plant a church. Cause I don't see a satellite campus like that surviving. And of course, Bill, with all the pull he has, it was 25, 30 people.
Right. Yeah.
So I said, look, you know, cause he's like the big, I was a nobody, you know, he's a big wambooey. And so it was like, you know, but I told him, I will ruin this. And it's just what and Bill's like, hey man, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it won't bear fruit. That was his attitude. It wasn't like, no, you know, it was like Daffy Duck with the, you know, mine, you know, with the little like pearl or the genie lamp or whatever on that cartoon. Bill was like, go for it, man. And so I tried to get rid of everybody I could. I would say for 6 weeks, remember all the John Wayne speeches? Eat my flesh and drink my blood.
See, I remember you saying it. I remember you thinking, and Charlie thinking, oh, there's going to be no one left.
That's what Charlie said. Charlie took me and goes, dude, stop. And for me, because we were losing people like quickly. We, on the first night, we had like 100 and something people. When I
just, really?
Yeah. Remember how packed it was that first night?
I don't remember. I may not have been there.
It was huge. And all these people, I'd come back and, okay, there was a lot of hype. You know, Peyton's back. You know, they like my preaching. You know, they want to come. Boom, boom, boom. And I said all the wrong stuff. I said, you guys are going to see miracles and you see demons cast out of people. We're going to do what they did in the book of Acts. I'm not going to play church. Boom, boom, boom. And I gave all these radical speeches. And what I was trying to do is get, I'd say to people, if you're here because it's close to your house, you're not cut out for this. You better find another church that's comfortable because this is going to be blood, sweat, and tears, baby. And that's what we did. And so I was purposely trying to kick people out and get rid of people because I knew I was going to lose them anyways. So at the end of it, what I wanted was a group of people that knew exactly where we're going, exactly what they're getting into. And once I had that team, kind of like Jesus, eat my flesh, drink my blood, he drove them away. And then the disciples, he goes, are you leaving too? And they go, Lord, where else can we go? Right. And that was, those are the people. They're like, hey, where else are we going to go and be able to experience this awesome adventure?
Well, it's kind of like why Jimbo came back.
Yeah, exactly.
He was like, we can't just go sit in the church anymore.
You know what? You were 100%. I have lost. I forgot. I have lost somebody who led a cog.
Yeah, but see, that's he didn't like leave because
No. He didn't.
They just had a kid.
Well, yeah, they had a kid.
And then he wussed out because he had a kid.
No, he didn't. Nap time was right where our service was.
I know he listens.
Then their friends were going through a crisis and they said, look, we need to be there. Their family. It was actually family and friends. So it was. I won't go into detail, but the deal was they really needed to be there for family. So he went back to the mothership, but he came back and said, dude, I got to come back because we can't just, you ruined us. You wrecked us for life. And I said at the time, I wasn't like sour grapes. How dare you? It was like, it's not about me. It's about mission. And I knew God had his hand on him. So I'm like, Jimbo, door's always open, man. You were an awesome leader. We loved having you. You can come back anytime.
And then he missed last Sunday.
What?
Doink, 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 doink. Woo, woo. Well, all right. Just in closing, I'd like to remind everyone right now, go over to churchplannerwebinar.com for tomorrow's webinar. And if you can't make it, can you hear my dog scratching herself?
Yeah.
If you can't make it. Stop it, dog.
If you can't make it, I have no idea what
you get the replay. So just sign up anyway.
Oh, that was cool. So you can get the like you did it. You kept saying it over like it was a replay. That was awesome. Man, I got to take a leak so bad I can taste it. There's another sound effect for you. Hey, this has been the Church Planner Podcast, reminding you if you want to reach the ones nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
Thanks for joining us for another weekly episode of the Church Planner Podcast with Pete Mitchell and Peyton Jones. We'd love to hear your comments on this episode of the Church Planner Podcast. Visit us online and let us know what you thought at churchplannerpodcast.com. If you subscribe to us via iTunes and have enjoyed the podcast, leave us a positive review. The more positive reviews we receive in iTunes, the more iTunes will promote us to other church planners who would benefit from this show. This podcast is brought to you by the Church Planner Magazine, which is available in the iTunes newsstand or online via churchplannermagazine.com.